At the start of World War II, millions of men showed up at registration offices to take low-level academic tests before being inducted. The years of maximum mobilization were 1942 to 1944. The fighting force had been mostly schooled in the 1930s, both those inducted and those turned away. Of the 18 million men who were tested, 17,280,000 of them were judged to have the minimum competence in reading required to be a soldier, a 96% literacy rate. Although this was a 2% fall-off from the 98% among voluntary military applicants 10 years earlier, the dip was so small it didn't worry anybody. World War II was over in 1945. 6 years later, another war began in Korea. Several million men were tested for military service, but this time 600,000 were rejected. Literacy in the draft pool had dropped to 81%, even though all that was needed to classify a soldier as literate was fourth grade reading proficiency. In the few short years from the beginning of World War II to Korea, a terrifying problem of adult illiteracy had appeared. The Korean War Group received most of its schooling in the 1940s, and it had more years in school with more professionally trained personnel and more scientifically selected textbooks than the World War II men, yet it could not read, write, count, speak, or think, as well as the earlier, less schooled contingent. A third American war began in the mid-1960s. By its end in 1973, the number of men found non-inductible by reason of inability to read safety instructions, interpret road signs, decipher orders, and so on, in other words, the number found illiterate, had reached 27% of the total pool. Vietnam-era young men had been schooled in the 1950s and the 1960s, much better schooled than either of the two earlier groups. But the 4% illiteracy of 1941, which had transmuted into the 19% illiteracy of 1952, had now grown into the 27% illiteracy of 1970. Not only had the fraction of competent readers dropped to 73%, but a substantial chunk of even those were only barely adequate. They could not keep abreast of developments by reading a newspaper. They could not read for pleasure. They could not sustain a thought or an argument. They could not write well enough to manage their own affairs without assistance. Consider how much more compelling the steady progression of intellectual blindness is when we track it through Army admission tests rather than college admission scores and standardized reading tests, which inflate apparent proficiency by frequently changing the way the tests are scored. Looking back, abundant data exists from states like Connecticut and Massachusetts to show that by 1840, the incidence of complex literacy in the United States was between 93 and 100% wherever such a thing mattered. According to the Connecticut Census of 1840, only one citizen out of every 579 was illiterate. And you probably don't want to know, not really, what people in those days considered illiterate. It's too embarrassing. Popular novels of the period give a clue. Last of the Mohicans, published in 1826, sold so well that a contemporary equivalent would have to move 10 million copies to match it. If you pick up an uncut version, you find yourself in a dense thicket of philosophy, history, culture, manners, politics, geography, analysis of human motives and actions, all conveyed in data-rich, periodic sentences so formidable that only a determined and well-educated reader can handle it nowadays. Yet in 1818, we were a small farm nation without colleges or universities to speak of. Could those simple folk have had more complex minds than our own? By 1940, the literacy figure for all states stood at 96% for whites, 80% for blacks. Notice that for all the disadvantages blacks labored under, 4 of 5 were nevertheless literate. 6 decades later, at the end of the 20th century, the National Adult Literacy Survey and the National Assessment of Educational Progress say 40% of blacks and 17% of whites can't read at all. Put another way, black illiteracy doubled, white illiteracy quadrupled. Before you think of anything else in regard to these numbers, think of this. We spend 3 to 4 times as much real money on schooling as we did 60 years ago. But 60 years ago, virtually everyone, black or white, could read. In their famous bestseller, The Bell Curve, prominent social analysts Charles Murray and Richard Herrnstein say that what we're seeing are the results of selective breeding in society. Smart people naturally get together with smart people, dumb people with dumb people. As they have children generation after generation, the differences between the groups gets larger and larger. That sounds plausible, and the authors produce impressive mathematics to prove their case. But their documentation shows that they are entirely ignorant of the military data available to challenge their contention. The terrifying drop in literacy between World War II and Korea happened in a decade, and even the brashest survival of the fittest theorist wouldn't argue evolution unfolds that way. The Bell Curve writers say black illiteracy and violence is genetically programmed, but like many academics, they ignore contradictory evidence. For example, on the matter of violence inscribed in black genes, the inconvenient parallel is to South Africa, where 31 million blacks live, the same count as living in the United States. Compare numbers of blacks who died by violence in South Africa in civil war conditions during 1989, 1990, and 1991 with our own peacetime mortality statistics, and you find that far from exceeding the violent death toll in the United States or even matching it, South Africa had proportionately less than 1/4 the violent death rate of American blacks. If more contemporary comparisons are sought, we need only to compare the current black literacy rate in the United States, 56%, with the rate in Jamaica, 98.5%, a figure considerably higher than the American white literacy rate, 83%. If not heredity, what then? Well, one change is indisputable, well documented, and easy to track. During World War II, American public schools massively converted to non-phonetic ways of teaching reading. On the matter of violence alone, this would seem to have impact. According to the Justice Department, 80% of the incarcerated violent criminal population is illiterate or nearly so, and 67% of all criminals locked up. There seems to be a direct connection between the humiliation poor readers experience and the life of angry criminals. As reading ability plummeted in America after World War II, crime soared, so did out-of-wedlock births, which doubled in the 1950s and doubled again in the 1960s, when bizarre violence for the first time became commonplace in daily life. When literacy was first abandoned as a primary goal by schools, white people were in a better position than black people because they inherited a 300-year-old American tradition of learning to read at home by matching spoken sound with letters. Thus, home assistance was able to correct the deficiencies of dumbed-down schools for whites. But black people had been forbidden to learn to read under slavery, and as late as 1930 only averaged 3 to 4 years of schooling. So they were helpless when teachers suddenly stopped teaching children to read, since they had no fallback position. Not helpless because of genetic inferiority, but because they had to trust school authorities to a much greater extent than white people. Back in 1952, the Army, quietly began hiring hundreds of psychologists to find out how 600,000 high school graduates had successfully faked illiteracy. Regna Wood sums up the episode this way. After the psychologists told the officers that the graduates weren't faking, Defense Department administrators knew that something terrible had happened in grade school reading instruction, and they knew it had started in the 30s. Why they remained silent, no one knows. The switch back to reading instruction that worked for everyone should have been made then, but it wasn't. In 1882, fifth graders read these authors in their Appleton school reader: William Shakespeare, Henry Thoreau, George Washington, Sir Walter Scott, Mark Twain, Benjamin Franklin, Oliver Wendell Holmes, John Bunyan, Daniel Webster, Samuel Johnson, Lewis Carroll, Thomas Jefferson, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and others like them. In 1995, a student teacher of fifth graders in Minneapolis wrote to the local newspaper, quote, "I was told children are not to be expected to spell the following words correctly. Back, big, call, came, can, day, did, dog, down, get, good, have, he, home, if, in, it, is, like, little, man, morning, mother, my, night, off, out, over, people, play, ran, said, saw, she, some, soon, them, their, time. Two, up, us, very, water, we, went, where, when, will, would, etc. Is this nuts?"